Hi, everyone, and welcome to Las Musas Podcast. My name is Alda P. Dobbs, and I am the author of Barefoot Dreams of Petra Luna. Today, I'm joined by Terry Catasus Jennings, Johnny Garza Villa, and Lakin Zaya Kemp. And today, on this episode of Debut Diaries, the Middle Grade and YS section, we'll be talking about marketing and publicity. Lakin, can you start us off by introducing yourself and telling us a little about your book?
Sure, absolutely. So my name is Lakin Zaya Kemp. I'm a Chicana Kid Lit author living in Austin, Texas, and my debut novel came out from Little Brown Young Readers last month, and it's a contemporary YA romance told in two voices. Pen is an aspiring pastry chef who dreams of continuing her father's cooking legacy despite her parents having different plans. And Xander is living undocumented with his abuelo, both of them estranged from Xander's father, who he is desperate to find. When Xander starts working at Penn's family restaurant, their worlds collide. But when both the restaurant and Xander's immigrant status are threatened, he and Penn must work together to save the place they both call home. And if you would like a signed copy of Somewhere Between Bitter and Sweet, you can get them at my local indie bookstore, Book People.
Yes, I got my copy 3 days ago in the mail.
Oh, yay.
Signature, and I love it. So it's sitting there. I think one more week I should be able to start. So I'm really looking forward to it. Beautiful cover, by the way. It's different when you're holding it in your hand and you see all those vibrant colors. Oh my goodness, it's beautiful. It's a gorgeous book.
Thank
it
you.
Is beautiful. It is beautiful. And I did not get mine signed. I just got mine from the store. So I'm sorry, but I will get it signed someday in person.
Yeah, we'll do that post-pandemic.
Right.
Johnny, can you please tell us about yourself and your book?
Of course. My name is Johnny Garza Villa, and I am a young adult author. And I wrote 1500 Miles from the Sun, which is about a Corpus Christi, Texas high school senior who accidentally comes out as gay on Twitter after getting tremendously drunk at a party. And in the days and weeks and months that follow, he will learn all of the great things and love and happiness that can come whenever we live as our true self, but also the pain and rejection that can come from living authentically. And that comes out June 8th, so soon.
Yeah, no, almost. It'll be here before we know it.
And oh my God.
I still cannot get over the title. I love the title. It's just wonderful. I know we talked about it a lot last episode, you know, but it's awesome. I still can't get over it.
And it just got a starred review.
It did.
Hey, Johnny.
Hey, that's awesome. Congratulations. All right, next we'll go with Terry. Terry, can you tell us about yourself and your book?
Yeah, I'm smiling really widely because thinking about Johnny's book and the beginning, it is amazing. So I'm Terry Catasus Jennings, and I'm a middle grade author and the author of the Definitely Dominguita series. And the series debuted on March 2nd. So two books came out, The Knight of the Cape and Captain Dom's Treasure. And it's about Dominguita Melendez, who is a Cuban American third grader, who loves the classics because her abuela read them to her as bedtime stories. And she is dared in the first book to become a knight. So she, like Don Quixote, tries to impersonate a knight. And then at the end of the Knight of the Cape, which is of course like Don Quixote, they decide that they can do this again for Treasure Island. And then coming out in August is All for One, who you can tell is the Three Musketeers. And in November will be Sherlock Dom. And I'm hoping that there will be more, but thank you so much. I'm so delighted to be here.
No, it's great. I read Dominguita and I loved it. I loved it. And now my daughter's reading it. And oh my goodness, she's been mesmerized with the characters. So thank you. Thank you so much for writing that. And myself, like I said, I'm the author of Barefoot Dreams of Petra Luna. It's about 12-year-old Petra Luna who stops at nothing to keep her family safe during the Mexican Revolution. So it's a middle grade historical novel that was inspired by the experiences my own great grandmother endured during the Mexican Revolution back in 1913. And I've been writing for a few years, but this is my first book. So obviously, right, I'm here in this debut series. So so thank you so much for joining us. And we're going to get started with the questions here. What do you think are the important differences between marketing and publicity?
So I think it's important to distinguish that marketing is paid promotion for your book and publicity is free promotion for your book. So an example of marketing would be your publisher buying ads on Goodreads or Amazon. And an example of publicity would be your publicist pitching you to a celebrity book club or and your book being selected for that. It's also been my experience that I interact significantly more with my publicity team at my publisher than my marketing team. So for example, about 5 months pre-pub, I had a meeting with my publicist to talk about what she planned on pitching me for, such as publications, book clubs, media appearances, and festivals. And then I shared the ideas that I had for increasing the book's visibility. But I never had a meeting like that with the marketing team. I know that some authors do, but I think they're typically like the superstar authors who are already bestsellers or who the publisher is planning to turn into a bestseller because, yes, they have some control over that. So yeah. I would say expect to be in touch with your publicist more than anyone else on the promotional side of things. Mm-hmm. And if you never get a marketing meeting, don't feel bad about it because most of us don't.
Yeah, I think that Lakin put it pretty well, but like, and also I would just really stress that like your publicity team is going to be that personal go-to and like a lot of different things, whether it's like including those different, like sending your book out to reviewers or to like important news people and stuff like that. They're also going to be the people that you're going to want to talk to for like festivals and different events like that. And like your marketing team is just kind of going to be the ones that like spend money on your book or maybe not, but like it's kind of depending. The main difference is that there's going to be a lot more of a relationship with your publicity than there is going to be with your marketing. And to really get to know that publicity team, if you can.
Yeah, no, that's true. It's a good point. Try to get to know the team members, you know, as early as you can and start getting familiarized with what they do so you could help them better. How about for you, Terry?
I think for me, being a chapter book author, and maybe it's because I'm just so far down the pecking order, I think that Lakin was, I know that Lakin was very right in that they have their superstars. In my case, I always go for anything that I need. I go through my editor. I don't have, there is a publicity group, there is a marketing group, but the publicity has been mostly from me going to the editor and them doing things. They do send copies out to the folks that I have asked them to send out for. But again, I think it has a lot to do with what expectations they have of your book. And I don't think they have great expectations of a little chapter book about a third grader in Cuban-American third grader. But I'm not saying that in bitterness. I just think it's
Yeah, you're right. I guess it depends where you are, if you're new, if you're established, mid-list. You know, there's just a whole variety of authors per house. And in my experience too, it's just the size of the house too. My publisher is not one of the big fives. So the marketing publicity seems to overlap a little bit. You know, and I've heard that's common for smaller houses. And, but so far right now I'm working with the team in more of the publicity stage. You know, we're proposing stuff for panels and festivals, reviews as well. So we're doing more of the, like Lakin said, that the free, you know, the aspect of it, which is publicity. Marketing, we had a meeting and that helped a lot. And, but yeah, I work with the same team for both purposes. So that's been my experience so far. Now for the next question, did your agent push for marketing efforts during negotiations? And what would you negotiate now after having been through the debut experience?
I remember my agent looking for specific language in the contract related to marketing and publicity. But the thing is, it's really difficult to get publishers to agree to anything concrete in both the contract and the subsequent marketing plan. Mm-hmm. So if you've ever been given a physical arc of a book, you may have seen some information on like the back cover about the marketing plan for that book. And you'll notice that the language is really vague, and it's purposely vague, right? On the one hand, especially on the publicity side of things, it's really hard to guarantee that the book will show up in a particular media outlet or that you'll be able to attend a particular festival. You know, a good publicist will obviously pitch you for those things, but someone else outside of the publisher is ultimately making those decisions. And then on the marketing side, there is a lot more control, but they still want to remain purposely vague because they're shifting priorities constantly. Like when your editor first acquired your book, they may have been expecting it to be a lead title, but in the time leading up to publication day, maybe they acquired another book that they want to throw more money behind. And so things will get cut from your marketing budget in order to make that happen. And all of that is going on behind the scenes. Like, I have no idea how much money the publisher was planning on spending on marketing for my book and like how much that budget has changed. So while it is important that there is some kind of language in your contract that talks about marketing and publicity, it's not really a good indicator of how much in-house support you're actually going to get. So I think knowing all of that and how tough it is to get a publisher to agree to specifics, I think the one thing that I would ask for in future contracts is for the publisher to reimburse me for any money that I spend on marketing for my book. And to me, I feel like that's really reasonable because, you know, I'm spending maybe a couple grand at the most, which is a drop in the bucket for them. And it also gives me some control in terms of making sure that at least some money is being put towards the marketing of the book, even if I'm the one who has to kind of initiate it.
I do know that like when it was kept pretty vague, but like also my publisher, Skyscape, which is an imprint owned by Amazon, did like push certain like initiatives or different sorts of like pros that could come from being with them. Ultimately, I decided not to use like the largest one. I kind of opted out of that one, but it was there. I feel like if anything, like you're gonna kind of, I think the biggest indicator of how much the marketing is going to be is related to how much your advance is. Like in general, if it's a small advance, then it's probably not going to be a huge marketing effort. And if it's a huge advance, then it probably is because they need to make that money back. And at the same time, I would agree, like at least definitely ask about things that you're putting your own money into. I know that we didn't ask necessarily at the conversation of the contract, but we did ask during our marketing, and then I think also like our subsequent publicity call, whether like any money would go towards pre-order campaigns and stuff like that, because I was already planning on those. And that answer was a very gentle no, but like, you know, you can always ask and like be upfront about like, I want to do this. And like, if you can, like, hey, like money would be nice. Because then that means like, maybe you could put even more effort into something like that. And that not necessarily that pre-order campaigns like really push the amount of books you're going to sell, but it generates excitement over people who are probably already going to buy your book, which will then get them talking to their friends and other people about it. So I would definitely, as far as like marketing goes, like ask about pre-order campaign. I think that's a great thing to at least make sure it gets on the table for a second, whether or not they say no and you have to write it off on your taxes, like mm-hmm. It's something that's asked.
I want to make sure that I say that my editor, even though, you know, it's a small book in a very big house, that my editor has been extremely, extremely generous with the copies of the books that I can use for giveaways and to give to people that I have hired for publicity. So she has been excellent as far as giving me copies of the books, completed copies and arcs and everything. So I didn't have any problem about that. But before I did my contract for Definitely Dominguita, it was my first book and I was just so delighted to have a contract. I never even thought of having negotiations about publicity and marketing and everything. And if my agent may have done that in the background, but I don't know that she did, but I was satisfied. I thought that that was something that that was coming. Definitely Dominguita's in a big house, and I have another book coming out in February, And I was invited to be with them at the last ALA. Now that was at a, you know, that was in my hometown. Mm-hmm. However, they didn't have to do that. And I thought, well, okay, they're thinking about this already. And we're already thinking about what we're going to do to publicize it. And then the next book, the other book that's also coming out next year, which is with a very, very, very small house. That was one of the editor's selling points. She said, we have a great publicity and marketing group, and it may be like you, Alda, it may be one person, but she pushed that. She said, this is what's, you know, we will be doing this and we'll be doing that, we'll be the other. Now, I just signed the contract yesterday and there was nothing about that in the contract, like Lakin said, but I can always say, okay, guys, now we talked about this. I think in a subsequent book, if what I would negotiate was, you know, I would just like to know. I would just like to sit down with somebody. It's not that I want them to do anything. I understand that there's a hierarchy, and I totally get that. But I would like to have sat down with somebody and said, okay, this is what we're going to do. And then I could say, okay, so I can supplement here, there, there. And rather than not knowing, it was more difficult not knowing. So now from now on, I'm going, and I talked to my agent and she said 6 months before launch, I'm going to push for, you know, more like 8 months before launch and say, okay, let's sit down and let's get me squared away. You know, I need a long lead time.
No, I totally understand. Cause yeah, you get so excited when they come with the contract and you're like, yes, yes, you know, sign me up. Yes, I'll do anything. But now hindsight, yeah, you got to think about stuff like that. You learn a lot. And for me, I had a low advance. So my agent, like you said too, Terry, behind doors, closed doors, I have a feeling, you know, they negotiated something. And I've had a great, wonderful time, you know, not time, I'm sorry, but conversations and discussions about marketing and publicity. And I think a lot of the efforts may have come from my agent, you know, I don't know what goes behind closed doors in those negotiations, but I'm happy. And one thing I wish I knew was what to tackle the months prior, you know, long before, so I could get ready, because I feel the pressure's coming now, you know, it's getting closer. And there are a lot of things, little details that I wish I would have known before, like, okay, what festivals are out there, what reviewers and stuff like that, and instead of scrambling now to find them. But no, that's a very good point. So now we're gonna go to the third question. Did you hire an outside publicist? And if so, what made you decide to go with this route? And how did you go about finding one?
I did not hire an outside publicist. I know some authors who have, but it just felt like an extra expense that, number one, I didn't want to have to worry about that. And number two, I really had no idea how to navigate that. Like at this point in my career, I really don't know enough about what makes a good publicist to be able to properly vet one. Mm-hmm. And so far, my publicist at LBYR has been incredibly communicative. There are some things that have come up that her department is not willing to do for me. So for example, I sent them a list of festivals that I wanted to be pitched for. Many of them were smaller festivals, but I prioritize them because they tend to have a large Latinx audience. And I was basically told that they're too small for them to pitch to, and that if I wanted to attend, I would have to just pitch myself. So that was a little frustrating, especially since I would prefer for my publisher to have a presence, you know, at a festival serving BIPOC communities. Like that's something that's really important to me. And I tried to express that via email that, you know, maybe these festivals would grow if publishers would send their authors there. And in my mind, that would greatly benefit the BIPOC communities these festivals are for, which include the very demographics that publishers claim that they want to reach out to, right? Mm-hmm. But anyway, I could talk for hours about equity and access. But to me, even though this was, like I said, really frustrating, it's not technically putting so much additional work on me that I feel like I need an outside publicist, if that makes sense. However, down the road, if it seems like there are other opportunities like this that LBYR isn't willing to help me with, I could see how an outside publicist might benefit me. They might help me connect with those communities and organizations that I care the most about. Mm-hmm. So I think hiring an outside publicist, there are some benefits to it, I think, mm-hmm. particularly for marginalized authors. But that's like a double-edged sword, right? Because we get the smaller advances. We don't have the discretionary income to be able to pay for an outside publicist. So,
yeah.
so you know, it might be nice to try out those services in the future if I was ever able to. Mm-hmm. But I also think it's worth it to keep pushing LBYR mm-hmm. for them to start thinking more about these types of things like equity and access and having a presence at festivals that serve by POC communities. So that's what I'm putting my energy towards right now, but I wouldn't, you know, say that I would never try that service.
So I didn't hire an outside publicist, but my publisher brought on a publicist, the wonderful Caroline Sun, to work with, like, in tandem with my Skyscapes, like, lead publicist person, with the incredible Brittany Russell. And so they kind of like worked together to like do that sort of publicity thing for me. And which I think has really served me well, because I think, like, at least in my opinion, we kind of came around pretty late in the game to like getting, like, going for reviewers and like just getting like the word out about my book, besides me just doing it on Twitter myself. And especially like having a publisher like Skyscape, where like my book isn't necessarily going to be as accessible in larger bookstores than like others would from other like imprints and publishers. I think it's really cool to have like more of a focus with like having two people do publicity for me, and be able to just reach like double the amount of outlets that one person could do.
I actually did hire an outside publisher. I actually did two. I did a small amount with both and mm-hmm. with each. Mm-hmm. And I chose people that I knew and people that had worked with other author friends of mine. So I thought one reason that I did it was that I thought that that was something I needed to do to show the publisher that I'm doing all that I can. Mine is a series and I want them to buy more of my books. So I'm trying to just be out there and just do as much as I possibly can to you know, to publicize my books. I worked with Blue Slip Media, and mm-hmm. they reached out to reviewers and bloggers, and I got an awful whole lot of reviews and blog places in addition to what I had done. I had tried to do a lot, and they did a lot. Now I have those though. Now mm-hmm. I have those names that I'm going to reach out to when I have my other books. Then the other one that I did, and this is something that I actually met this lady at, and we kind of hit it off. I met her at an event for another author, and she did his library and a classroom in library materials for him. And he mm-hmm. was a nonfiction author. And so I thought, wow, that's great. Now I've done all my classroom materials. And I think that's really important for a chapter book. But she also has this humongous mailing list of librarians. And so she came up with activities for my books for mm-hmm. to go along with my, to go for librarians, so that a librarian can spend 15, 20 minutes doing this activity with the kids and their hands-on activities. And what she came up with was wonderful. And so it wasn't a whole lot. And she did an awful whole lot. What came out was wonderful. And I think it hit my sweet spot. I love to connect with teachers and librarians so that kids will get to read my book. So I think I will continue with her in other books, because she even took the materials that I had made and she polished them and made them mm-hmm. even better than what they already were. Now, Lakin, I also asked to be pitched to the smaller local festivals, and I was also told you know, sorry, but we just don't do that. And it didn't make a lot of sense to me, because to reach out is just like send an email and it just makes sense to me. But there you go. That's the way they are. It is.
No, I like that you actually hire someone. So for you, I like that it was an investment, yet like you said, now you're established and you have those contacts, you have that network that's going to help you with your subsequent books coming out. So it's good. For me, I considered hiring. I heard that you could hire publicists, you know, like we said, to pitch you for events, for reviews, or a marketing team, you could hire them too to place ads and whatnot and the timing. But I heard that nothing's guaranteed either, right? So they could pitch and they could place ads, but you know, they're not gonna guarantee sales or whatnot. So, and for me, you know, it was a little pricey and my advance wasn't high. So I really thought about it. And after much thought, I figured, you know what, let me see what my marketing team is doing. And so far, you know, I like what they're doing. And also, you know, I joined Las Musas, which wonderful, you know, they're helping me so much. I love it. And so far, so good, you know, but who knows in the future, you know, for stuff like that, you know, I don't have time to do, or if I get caught up, I think that's a good thing to look into. And now I have Terry to, you know, give me advice of who to hire. So thank you. Now with the next question, what are you doing to help your marketing and publicity teams? How much do you do versus what should you let your team handle? And did you spend your own money on marketing efforts? I know you talked a little bit about that, and how much?
So I did do several things on my own, but I'll just kind of hit the high points of either what I most enjoyed or what I think was maybe most effective. Mm-hmm. So one thing I did was I got a big group of teachers and librarians that I knew because I'm a former teacher. Mm-hmm. I got them to read and review the digital arc of the book. So mm-hmm. they actually had access to digital arcs, I think in May of last year. No, yes, May of last year. And then the physical arcs didn't come out until September. So it was kind of like an advanced review mm-hmm. copy that they had access to. And I think having those early reviews show up on Goodreads really worked in my favor. Also, just the word of mouth between those teachers and librarians and other educators that they knew was like gold. Mm-hmm. I did a big postcard campaign and sent personalized postcards to public librarians in Texas, as well as public librarians I could find sort of in the Southwest area who I could easily identify. They had something on like their website or their social media that showed that they identified as Latinx. I wrote so much on each one that it took me literally months to fill them all out. But I was just so excited and also feeling really grateful for all of the work that librarians do. So I just went a little, you know, overboard with my love and affection for them. And then one other really unique thing that I did that tied in really nicely with the content of the book was I sent an assortment of Mexican cookies from a Mexican bakery to certain independent bookstores. Mm-hmm. So either bookstores that were doing a book club read of the book or who were doing an event for me. And I also included Texas indie bookstores in that, as well as some Latinx owned bookstores. And all of the packages arrived on release day. And some of the stores even posted photos of the cookies with the book on their social media accounts. Mm-hmm. So it was definitely the most expensive bit of promotion that I did. But again, I was just feeling a lot of gratitude at the time. And because I couldn't celebrate with any of these bookstores in person, I just really wanted to connect with them somehow. Mm-hmm. And also just to thank them for the work that they do and all the ways they serve their communities while also uplifting books by Latinx and by POC authors. So those are some things that I really enjoyed doing that I would definitely do again. I think in terms of how much you should do versus what you should let your team handle, it's really easy to go overboard and to add a million things to your to-do list. So, you know, in hindsight, I tried some things out, maybe mm-hmm. figured out that I didn't really enjoy doing that task. And so I won't do it again. I think that's important to think about, like, what I'm going to be spending my time doing this. when I could be writing or resting or doing something else. So it needs to be something that you enjoy. So maybe instead of thinking about like practical ways to split up the work, think about like what work you actually want to take on that you're actually going to enjoy doing. And then in terms of like budget, I can't even guess how much it was. but that's because, you know, I worked on things so incrementally, like in the 8 months leading up to PUB. Mm-hmm. And before this, the recording of this episode, I just did not have time to like go back through my receipts and figure out what exactly I spent. Uh-huh. But I'm sure that at some point in the future, I'll do a detailed blog post about it to kind of break mm-hmm. down what I spent and what I spent money on. Because I know that would probably be helpful for people to see. But that's why I mentioned earlier that going forward, I am going to try to approach the publisher either at the contract phase or later on in the process about reimbursing me for those things, just because it was a lot of work and because the costs did grow over time, because I had so many months leading up to PUB where I was trying all these different things. So I would think about, you know, what you're willing to spend and set that money aside as soon as you get your advance. Make sure you're comfortable with that amount. But then also, you know, see if you can get a little bit more from your publisher, either you or your agent, see if you can approach them and ask them to reimburse you for certain things. And you might have to ask for each individual item or thing that you plan to do. So they might say no to reimbursing you for a pre-order campaign, but they might say yes to reimbursing you for driving out of town for a festival. So I would keep those things in mind too, that you might not just be working with the money in your advance. You might be able to eke out a little bit more, mm-hmm. but also you might not.
Yeah, that's true. No, I'm with you. I get excited too. And I'm thinking, oh, I could use this, I could use that. And before you know it, I'm like, what, how much money have I spent already in time? Like you said, the time just it takes to get things together, letters and whatnot. So yeah, it's definitely something to consider and keep track of too. And I'm still thinking of that pan dulce that you mentioned. I can't get it out of my head, especially with this weather. Oh my goodness. All right, how about for you, Johnny?
Yeah, so one of like the first things I did was I gave my publicity team a list of like Latinx bookish people, like book bloggers, bookstagrammers, all of that sort of people. And I wanted to make sure that like I, like whether it was sending ARCs to them or like any kind of creation of like a book tour or something during my book launch, like I wanted these people prioritized. And I wanted to make sure that like these names, especially if they were like queer Latinas, that like they were put to the front of the list, because like this is who I wrote the book for. Like I was not going to be happy if I saw a bunch of like white teenage girls with my book on Instagram. So I wanted to make sure that like they had that, and like there was no reason why they couldn't like do that. I also, like when Lakin shared her list of librarians, I was like, okay, cool. I asked my publisher if they had any sort of like librarian outreach plans. They did not. So I was like, okay, that's fine. I got it, whatever. So I went and looked for the cutest postcards I could find and then like just did that myself. What I like to do in terms of like whether I'm gonna handle it or whether my publisher's gonna handle it is like, if there's some sort of personal like connection or something like ingrained in that interaction, I would like to handle it personally. Like if it's like I had like a Texas librarian contacted me not too long ago about being on a panel in June, and I was like, yes, like I will ask my publisher if like we can set that date, and like I'll take care of it. Or like if it's like a local bookstore, like I can do that myself. Or if it's a librarian that I know off of Twitter, or like I can go and interact myself with these people because we already have some sort of connection, or like I would want to create a connection myself with these people in terms of like librarians connecting with me who I had no idea existed beforehand. Like if I can do that myself, because I know I'm not going to be with my I already know this for sure, I'm not going to be with my publisher for forever. And so I would like to be able to leave with those connections rather than having them make those connections for me. But if it's like Kirkus, or if it's like Book Riot or things like that, like they can do that. I don't need to know like some book reviewer from from Publishers Weekly. Like they have those sort of connections. I don't necessarily know those sort of connections. So I leave those kind of big things for them. And then, what was it? So I do spend money. I have like a pre-order campaign happening right now that I am spending money on. And I think it's just important to like, I went for the basics, like a couple of character cards, a book, oh my God. Mm-hmm. Those stickers that I'm gonna sign that you can just put wherever, a book plate. Oh, book plate. Uh-huh. Like anything that I could just like would be most cost effective as far as shipping, because I mean, the moment you put a pin in an envelope, like it's gonna cost some money. And so this is my first book. Like I just want something that like could be a little cute for people to have and like celebrate with me. So like I went for like just character cards and a book plate. And I think it's also important, not necessarily just thinking about money, but thinking about the effort that you want to take on, because that's like envelopes that you're going to have to write names and addresses on and like do all that stuff and get it to a post office and like order them and make sure you have enough time to order them and ship them and like have your sanity all together like while doing that. So there's definitely like not just money, but think about like everything you're ordering and like how you're going to get it to you and how you're going to ship it and making sure that that like doesn't just derail, you know, a couple of weeks before your launch. Yeah, and as far as I'm not sure how much money I'm spending yet, but I guess ask me in a couple months and I'll probably have a number.
No, it's easy to lose track, but
no, we're just not even going to think about it right now and like
get depressed.
We'll think about it in like August. It's fine.
Yeah, no, it's true. You're right. I've always heard that it's better to send it flat if it's something that can go flat, you know, a bookmark, stickers, a book plate, signed book plate. It's better because then you get that regular stamp, you know, that calls for shipping. Otherwise, anything else you add in there, a magnet or a pin, it's going to change everything.
I really wanted a pin, but I was like, I'm just not, I can't do that. Like, it's not a thing that can happen right now. So maybe next time, I don't know, but who knows?
Yeah, no, that's true. And how about for you, Terry? What's your experience?
I want to hit on what Johnny just said about mailing all this stuff. You know, you get a certain amount of royalties and on each book. And if you're spending more, you know, the amount of response that you're going to get from what you do is not going to be huge. And then if you're spending more on mailing these things and producing these things that you're going to get in royalties, it's not all that great an idea. So going back to the question, at some point I went to an SCBWI workshop. The book was already in the works and the presenter said that you need to keep some of your advance for your own marketing and publicity. And I went, whoa, I didn't know I had to do that. So thank goodness I hadn't spent at all. So I talked to my agent and she said, yes. And she said, do about 20% of your advance. So I, you know, set that aside and I was expecting to spend that. So when the time came and I was, you know, I really wasn't expecting the publisher to do anything to begin with, because I had been to that SCBWI workshop and, you know, nobody had really said anything about it. So when I called my agent back and I told her what I was planning on doing, tell me, you know, what do you think about this? What do you think about that? And she said, well, you're trying, I wouldn't do that much. So I scaled back considerably. And that was when I decided, well, for that one company, for Blue Slip, and they're good. And I thought, well, okay, so I'll just go with one, the reviewers and bloggers part, because the rest of the stuff, hey, I can probably do myself. And I did very much want to do the other one is called Curious City. And the lady's name is Kristen Cappy. And she was, she's wonderful. And that was something that I wanted to do regardless. So I put that in my budget. One thing that I did myself, like Lakin, was make the postcards. I had postcards made of my of the cover of Dominguita, and I sent them to every independent bookstore on the I forget the group, the trade organization for independent bookstores, but they have a list, and I went through every one and I checked to see who whether they sold children's books or not. And I sent a card. Did that work or not? I asked my agent to check, and she could not, you know, I wanted to see if I could have, you know, because I sent them to everywhere. You know, mm-hmm. I don't think I sent them to Alaska, but that was probably the only place I didn't. And I wanted to see if there was a way of seeing where everything got, you know, got where people were buying the book. Mm-hmm. Having said that, I got Kirkus put Dominguita as one of the 15 books with, what was it they call it, word of mouth buzz.
Wow.
Now here's this little chapter book with word of mouth buzz. So maybe that did have something to do with it. And I do plan to do it again for books number 3 and number 4. But I did like Lakin. I hand wrote every one of them, and I'm not doing that again. I will have that printed out, and I'm gonna work really hard on my words, and I'm gonna have it printed out, and then I'm gonna have printed labels. I have to have that, and it should not be, it was a labor of love, and this one will be a labor of mechanics, just bonk, bonk, mm-hmm. bonk, bonk, and I should be done. But I thought it was good. I was about to make bookmarks, and then when I asked the editor for good high resolution pictures, she said, oh no, we'll do it for you. And that was good. Mm-hmm. It would have been very reasonable to do my own bookmarks, and I would still, you know, I would do it for the other books or for others, because you do put them in the books that you sign and you do leave them at the bookstore. Mm-hmm. But I will say that I didn't use that many. You know, mm-hmm. they may have sent me a couple hundred, and I've used most of them. Okay. But, you know, when I made the postcards, I did it in the hundreds and hundreds. Mm-hmm. I wouldn't do that with the bookmarks. Mm-hmm. It's nice to have, uh-huh. but I wouldn't do, you know, many, many, many.
No, I like that detective work you did about going to the Booksellers Association, right, and looking up the list to see what bookstores are out there. And so that's great. You know, when you look at bookstores, you look up libraries in the area and or in the state, and that's wonderful to do that kind of work to make those contacts, to make those connections. And you know, the handwritten note, I've heard when it's handwritten that it goes far, you know, it really touches, you know, the librarians or the people receiving it. So, but I could also see your side about, you know, time consuming and whatnot. So I printed up cards, and I'm still in the process of writing stuff and hopefully sending them out. So I may have to look up that list again for librarians. And I have some bookmarks ready to go. Hopefully, you know, my goal is that schools will be open in the fall, and maybe then I could pass them out. And so another thing I did to help my team was from the get-go, I started writing questions. I would see other study guides, educator guides, and try to see how they did their questions. And I did my own. My husband and I worked on my own. And once the publisher said they were going to start working on one, I showed them what I had, and they liked it. So all they did was just add the graphics. So that was nice, you know, that they took that work. And also trying to figure out reviewers, you know, looking out there and looking for bloggers and trying to find them. And I don't have Twitter, so it's kind of difficult sometimes for me to find out who's good out there or not, you know, who's got the audience, because I don't have Twitter. So I feel kind of, that's, you know, I'm in the shadows there, in the shade, you know, I can't see Twitter. But that's what I've done so far. And the same thing, I don't know how much money I have spent so far. You know, I feel like if I start looking at the details, I'll probably get depressed, and I'll be like, oh my goodness, this is gonna be worth it, you know, at the end or not. But you know, live and you learn. So I know I'm gonna learn a lot from this book, and by next book, I'll probably be better, you know, at knowing what worked, what didn't work. So you just trial and error. That's my opinion. So, all right, we move on to the fifth question. What do you feel has been most and least rewarding and or effective thing you or your publisher has done in terms of marketing?
So first, I want to say in regards to the last question, I can't believe I totally forgot about the coolest thing that I did which was part of my pre-order campaign. My grandmother sewed 80 something headbands match the headband that Penn wears on the cover of the book.
Oh, sweet.
Yeah, it was really special. My grandparents live with my mom, and so, you know, they were going to the fabric store every other weekend because I was getting all these pre-orders in, and like I kept forgetting to close the form. and I just wanted, you know, everyone who pre-ordered, like I wanted to reward them and thank them and wanted them to have that. And we, you know, bought some like iron-ons that had the book title that we put at the back of the headbands. But because they were not flat, like shipping those 80 plus headbands was almost $400. Oh, so that is a dollar amount that I can remember.
Oh yeah.
Yeah. And so, you know, combining that with all the other things I did, like there's no telling how much I spent. But you know, in terms of like what has been the most rewarding or effective, I actually had a phone call with my agent just yesterday, and I was sort of venting to her that debuting in the middle of a pandemic has felt really anticlimactic. And because of that, it's been really difficult psychologically because I'm just such a goal-oriented person. Like I want to be able to take specific steps and then measure my success in a tangible way. And I just can't do that right now. Like I have no way of knowing how widely the book has been shared. I have no idea if any of these virtual events that I've done or interviews and publications have actually led to sales. And to an extent, you know, it's that way for every author. We have very little control once the book is actually out in the world. But for those of us debuting during the pandemic, it's even harder to get a temperature check on how the book is performing. So I wish I had an answer to this question, but it would just be purely speculation because I really have no idea what's been the most effective. As far as the most rewarding though, I just recently started having my first school visits and I am absolutely hooked on those. Like I love talking with students and teachers. So if you're listening, please, please, please go to my website, get in touch with me so I can visit your school or your library or your book club or your creative writing group, wherever you gather, like I want to be there. So yeah. Please don't hesitate to reach out to me because that is really where I'm getting like all of my debut joy right now. And that's the only kind of like real world, tangible aspect of this experience that I'm getting to, or aspect of this dream that I'm getting to live out. All of that other stuff, you know, having a book launch in person and going on a book tour and traveling and going to cons and festivals and seeing the lines and seeing people walking to the register with the book, like we're not gonna get any of that. And so I'm trying to get used to it and I'm trying to, you know, measure the experience in other ways. So, you know, maybe post debut, we can all do like a post-mortem on what we think actually worked in terms of marketing and promotion. But I think right now, 1 month post debut, I have no idea what's worked and what hasn't.
You're right. There's just so much uncertainty, you know, in every aspect, whether it's school visits or marketing or book sales, even. I mean, you have no idea. And same thing, I guess that's across the publishing industry. But just to reiterate what Lakin said, yes, please call her because she's an educator too. And she's phenomenal when she talks. So please, you all love her. You all love her in your classrooms.
Thank you.
No problem. How about Johnny? How about you?
So I think I didn't do this personally, but like Skyscape does this thing with Amazon that's called like First Look something. I don't know. Like, it's this program essentially where your book would come out like at the very beginning of a month, and they wanted my book to be included in their Pride Month selection. So it would have been available to Prime members starting on June 1st, and it would be available like on Kindle. And I think it would have also been available in paperback in select areas. I know like the UK, it would have been available in paperback starting June 1st. And that would have meant that my book would have come out, like, actually out to, like, everyone July 1st. They were going to give me money to offset the amount that, like, royalties would not have covered, because, like, they were assuming that a large group of people are going to get my book on Kindle and those sort of things. And it wasn't a small amount of money that they were going to give me to offset that. Like, it was a pretty big amount. But, like, and it was, like, it was, it's a great program, like, if that's kind of, like, what you want. And, like, it, the opportunity to have, like, a lot of reviewers potentially read your book within those 30 days or so before it's available to everyone, like, that's a huge thing to help any reader, really. But I decided not to do it myself, because I, maybe, like, this kind of ties into, like, Lakin's perspective, but, like, being in a pandemic, like, the last time I was able to sit outside of a Starbucks was when I got, like, the call that I had, that Skyscape was interested in my book, like, last February. And so I was explaining to them, like, this whole process has been in a pandemic, and if I can choose one thing that's, like, kind of normal, and to have an actual publication date where everyone gets to have it at the same time, I want that. I want just a normal publication date. Like, I don't want some people to be able to read it June 1st and then everyone else to read it on a Thursday, like, July 1st. Like, that's not even a real pub date. That's just some weird day of the week. And, like, I told them this, and I told them that I also just didn't necessarily feel comfortable. Like, yeah, it was, like, a Pride Month selection, but it's like, I wasn't seeing one, a lot of queer titles just any month of the year. And I wasn't seeing a lot of BIPOC titles any month of the year. And especially as a YA book, like, you always have to think of, I wanted to know, like, who that readership was for this program. Is it a bunch of adults who are going to select my book and then start talking about, these read too much like teenagers, 2 stars? Like, there was a lot of hindrance about, like, was this going to be effective for me, or could this just, like, completely implode on itself to where I get a bunch of people who don't like what my book is about and people who just shouldn't be reading YA and talking about reading YA. Like, there was a lot of that too. And so I decided to tell them no, and they took it well. Like, I gave them all these reasons and they were fine with it. But, like, if I thought it was a good opportunity, like, I had a hard time saying no, because there was a lot of pros about it that I think specifically with that, with this publisher, they offer, like, a really cool thing. So that would be, that was the most rewarding thing they do offer, even though I didn't take it. And I think just in terms of, like, myself, I don't know personally, maybe I'm just not thinking too highly of myself, but my agent says that, like, I have been able to work social media really well to my advantage, and, like, talking about my book, like, way before my publisher has even started talking about my book. Like, I know that, like, not too long ago we were getting numbers of, like, I had, like, a, I think it was close to a few hundred pre-orders, like, before my publisher even, like, before Kirkus and before any kind of big reviewers happened, like, this word of mouth was happening to get me, like, some large-ish, I guess, number of pre-orders. And so I think that's, like, one thing that I particularly, I guess, do well is talk about my book.
No, that's a great point. I like that they offered you that opportunity, and you kind of weighed the pros and cons, you know, to see what worked for your book, because I'm sure it's particular for each book. But it's great that you had that opportunity to not only have the offer, but also to decide what was
best. Oh, yeah. And, like, I was, like, my agent was like, whatever decision you make is fine with me. Like, I get it. And I was just like, well, then can you please tell me what I should choose? Because I don't know.
No, that's great. And how about for you, Terry? What was your experience?
I think the most rewarding thing is, like, Lakin, is connecting with the kids, is having author visits. And I had one with a very big bookstore here in Washington, Politics and Prose, and it went out to a whole bunch of schools, and then somebody saw it, and then now I'm doing something for our local PBS station. So, you know, that kind of thing just keeps going, and I'm hoping that going to festivals and stuff like that will be helpful. I think anything that you do is going to be rewarding. I mean, it's going to work. It may not be as good. Some things may be better than others, but I think anything that you do is going to be good. But connecting with the kids is, to me, was the best thing.
For me, I guess just like everyone else, the uncertainty of the times, I can't tell you what's working and what's not. For instance, I ask about school visits. My book is out in the fall and I want to schedule something or know that something's going to happen in the fall. And because schools are about to close right now, they'll be out for the summer. And they keep telling me, well, nobody knows anything. You know, they won't answer. They won't. It seems like people are still afraid of making any plans. So you just got to sit down and wait, you know, and hope for the best come September, see if things are reopening and whatnot. But so probably by then, and of course, after my launch, I think I'll know, have a better idea of what worked or what not, see what's out there. Now for the next question, is there a general timeline you follow for marketing your book? What were some of the big milestones you made sure to or planning to hit?
So Little Brown had me start doing events and things to promote the book about 8 months out from release. It started with one or two events a month, and then it gradually increased. I spent a lot of that time just gathering contact information for teachers and librarians who I wanted to reach out to closer to pub. During that time, I also paid close attention to what other authors were doing and then searching or researching those tactics and opportunities to see if they'd be a good fit for me. And I ended up creating a Google Doc where I kept all of this information, organized it by different categories. So there were lists like book clubs, product collaboration ideas, social media, traditional media, print media outlets. And like I mentioned, teachers and school librarians. I had a separate category for librarians working in public libraries. Mm-hmm. And I had a list of local indie bookstores I wanted to reach out to, indie bookstores in cities with a large Latinx population, and then Latinx owned bookstores. Mm-hmm. And I also kept track of any podcasts that I wanted to appear on, pending interviews, virtual events, that sort of thing. And then we just figured out what my publicist was going to coordinate and what I was going to coordinate. And I tried to work on those things just little by little up until the book came out, which is why, as we've been discussing, why like the money can get out of hand, because you're working on this so far in advance. And every time you hear of a cool idea that you want to try out, like you spend mm-hmm. more money. So I feel like there were things I could have been more efficient with, but mm-hmm. I just didn't know how much lead time would be needed for different things. For example, some publications need 3 months in advance to conduct and write up an interview, and some mm-hmm. only need a week. Mm-hmm. So there was just this torrent of things that needed to be done in the 2 weeks leading up to my publication date, which just, you know, increased my sense of overwhelm. Mm-hmm. So I'll definitely be doing some adjusting to my promo schedule for book two, but I think overall it was really helpful to have all of it in one document, organized by those different categories. Mm-hmm. And then in terms of milestones, the publicity team was really focused on getting the book into any celebrity book club.
Yeah.
And I feel like they were putting a lot of energy towards that, and then it didn't happen. So I feel like that would have been a milestone that, or something they would have considered to be a milestone. I'm not sure if I can think of like any other big things that they were shooting for, at least not any that they shared with me.
Yeah.
I was mostly just focused on my launch and trying to get, you know, a few more events happening in the month of April, which I ended up having to plan on my own, and then getting school visits kicked off and having presentations ready to go for that. Those are the things that I wanted to make sure I had done and that I had things kind of lined up in those areas before the book came out. But yeah, they focused a lot of their attention on the celebrity book clubs. And I was like, y'all, that, like I knew that I wasn't going to get picked for Reese's book club. So yeah, so that's where they put their energy.
And how about for you, Johnny?
Yeah, so I know that at least my team has been, for the last couple of months, or at least maybe before that, like putting together a package to send to like those sort of outlets and reviewers. I mean, like now whenever I get like any kind of update, it's like a whole list of like who they've sent and like what reviews are going to be coming soon and who's like currently reading it and who they're waiting for. And like it's not an insubstantial list. Like it's pretty big. It covers like national outlets and even like local ones from like San Antonio, which is really cool. So like they kind of have been handling that sort of thing. And I know that like a lot of it is basically geared towards like really hitting like in May, and just like, I guess, making sure that like people are just annoyed of seeing my name like over the next few weeks. And even myself, like I've been reaching out to like BookTubers specifically. Like I have a couple of like Latina BookTubers I'm being interviewed with, and a couple of queer ones I'm being interviewed with, and a couple that are like kind of been diagrammed in both those identities, and blogs and stuff. And those I've kind of like handled on my own and just let my publisher sort of handle like the big people. And I guess like my, and like all of us together, like we're kind of focusing, I mean, not necessarily like super detailed yet. Like it's really, actually it's not really planned at all, but my launch, like I know like way back when, it's been like sometime late last year, I had interest from this like actress that I was like, that I'm really into, and who like I had just like mentioned her as like, oh yeah, like I think it was like some sort of Twitter chat, and I was like, I would love it if like she did my book launch. And then she had replied and was like, actually I would love to. And I was like, oh my god. And so like we ended up like DMing a little bit, and like I gave, like she gave me her manager's information, and like we sent them an arc, and like we're just kind of like waiting to see if, one, she likes my book, and two, if she would be down to do my book launch. And like, so it's kind of like we're like, I'm definitely looking at that, like, okay, like what is going to happen on June 8th? Because like, can't really plan anything until like my publisher has told me whether or not she's going to do it or not, which I kind of like bother me about like weekly. Like, has she read it? Does she like it? Like, do I need to DM her right now? Because until then, like, I don't really know what's happening on June 8th. So yeah, that's like the kind of like the one big milestone that we're like, I'm really focused on. But I know that like this is gonna take like months. Like I know in June, like I don't even have like a release date. Like it's Pride Month. The whole month is my launch. And like I already have like library visits and like a Pride Festival book thing happening. Like it's not necessarily just like the launch is the big milestone. It's like the weeks after, like what's happening there and like who you're reaching out to. It's like from before it becomes like BookTubers, and then after it becomes libraries and bookstores, and like just making sure that like my name keeps getting talked about.
Mm-hmm. No, that's great that you have that celebrity contact. I'm crossing my fingers.
Manifesting so hard.
Yeah, no, and you never know. There's this author, Daniel Ailman.
Oh yeah, Daniel.
Book. Uh-huh. Yeah, he's got that book, Indivisible. And wonderful book. And he reached out to Jodi Picoult and said, hey, I would love a blurb from you. And she responded and said, sure. And he was, you know, over the moon. I just couldn't believe it. So yeah, you know, reach for the stars. How about for you, Terry? Do you have a marketing timeline and any goals you want to hit?
I went and looked back, and I made a whole bunch of, I'm a spreadsheet person. I made a whole bunch of spreadsheets as to who I was going to send the arcs to, what festivals I was gonna do. I started, got information from my agent, and it looks like the dates on those started at like in September, and my launch was on March 2nd. So I started 6 months ahead. Having said that, I wish I had started earlier, and I couldn't have, because being a series, I was still writing book three and four. I was probably still writing book four in August. So I know I was writing book three in July, and then book four was August and September. So I couldn't start it any earlier. And that's something that you need to think about if you are, if you're a, you know, an unpublished writer, and you are thinking, well, okay, I get my date when my book is going to be released, and you don't have anything that you can say about it. But if you're with different houses, or even with the same house, you are having to do things all the time. You're still having to write, you're still having to revise, you're still having to do a lot of things on the book while all this launch stuff is going on. And even if you're with the one house, I had stuff going on with three different houses, and there was a whole lot of stuff going on that I couldn't get to really start doing a lot of the marketing. But I did big lists of bloggers and reviewers, and I did the library list, and I started reaching out to people ahead of time. But I think the big push came starting in January when I sent out my little cards. And that was, to me, it was like, okay, I'm turning the key. I'm really doing this, and mm-hmm. I'm not going to do anything else but promote my book. And I did January, February until March 2nd. I didn't do that. And then, like Johnny said, after March 2nd, then you start with the library, the actual launch events and your school visits and your library visits. And it's great. And that's so much fun. Mm-hmm. But while you're doing that, that's a promotion kind of thing. So you really have to plan for the fact that the 2 months after your release, you're going to be very, very, very busy doing things. And, you know, I can't imagine if this had been in person and I had been doing as many events as I did, because holy cow, I have done a lot of event on Zooms. And mm-hmm. I don't know how it would have been if I had done those in person. And mm-hmm. a lot of those were pretty local. And so I would have done them anyway. So I think it would have been it would have been even more time consuming and labor intensive if I had done them. But yeah, September was when I started, and then January I know is when I started really, really pushing it. Mm-hmm. And then you can't stop, because afterwards, once your book is out and you get the reviews, well, you have you want to thank, not you don't have to, you want to thank the folks that were nice to you. You want to send them copies of your book. So yeah, and people that did so much for you. So yeah, it's a long, long process.
That's true. Yeah. And I laughed when you mentioned the word spreadsheet, because I have one spreadsheet, but I have about 30 or 40 tabs at the bottom, and I could never, I'm like, okay, I'm sure I had a tab with that label. Where is it? You know, I'm scrolling and I'm like, oh my goodness, I got to get better organized, because I just keep adding a different tab and then I forget what's what. But anyways, yeah, it's almost like you said, it's almost like a full-time job, you know, just trying to find ways to market your book, the bloggers, reviews, and working on that. I mean, for me, it's taken a lot of energy, but I also have to focus on the book, you know, on book two coming up. And that's why I tell people about the planning too, because you have the luxury of time for that first book. And then for book two, you're so busy, you don't have that same time to dedicate to book two. So it's something that I'm learning to juggle, you know, knowing that I have the timelines now. And my goals to hit, I mean, there's, yes, I want to reach out to librarians and establish myself. So hopefully I could get school visits and library visits. But a lot of the stuff, you know, like reviews and stuff, you know, it's out of your hands. You know, it's whether, you know, publishers submit it and hopefully they'll review it. You know, it's nice. They do. So, and that's another thing, like Terry said, the whole thanking process too afterwards, you know, you feel, you know, they've done so much for you. You want to thank them and show your appreciation to, and also pay it forward too, you know, help out the up and coming authors too. So we'll go with the next question. What advice do you give to unpublished writers when it comes to marketing and publicity? Is it too early to start before signing the contract?
My one bit of advice is, if I had to boil it down to one thing that I think is super effective, is to have a newsletter. So in our second Ask a Musa episode, we shared our best marketing tips. So I won't repeat everything that I said in that recording, but just to summarize, your social media followers technically don't belong to you. They belong to that particular platform, and that platform can make changes whenever they want. They could limit how much you're able to interact with those followers on a regular basis. But a newsletter is a direct line between you and your readers. You don't lose or limit your contact with them unless they unsubscribe. So I would say as soon as you can, even if you don't have an agent yet, you know, I would start building that. Even if in the beginning it's just for family and friends, I think it's good to get into the habit of regularly sending one out. And it'll also serve as a nice little archive for documenting your publishing journey. I've been blogging since 2012. And since 2012, like intermittently sending out newsletters, monthly newsletters as well. And it's really just in the past maybe 18 months that I've gotten really consistent at sending, in terms of sending out the newsletter every month. But it is really nice to be able to go look back at what I was doing almost 10 years ago and like where I was at in my writing journey. And, you know, my audience was always relatively small, but I do know that there were people who liked my writing on my blog who then went on to buy my books. So having a newsletter, I think, is super important and something that I would definitely recommend.
I would say if you are like on Twitter to like start getting familiar with some of the really important names that like are around there, you know, that people like Rachel Stroll, who like works with BuzzFeed and like also has a whole database of like every single year of books coming out. There are booksellers like Mike Lasagna and Cody Roker who like are just really big about talking about books and like their job as booksellers. Adriana at Booty Girl Reads is like such a huge champion for Latina authors in our book community. And she has so many resources that like she can give you as an author whenever you're like you're at that point. And even like Adria, Perpetual Pages is also like just a really vocal person when it comes to like Latina books. So just like from like, you don't have to like go and introduce yourself. Like that's not anything you have to do, but just like getting familiar with like their platform and like who they are and stuff like that can like give you a lift whenever it's like time to, like if you want to do bookseller blurbs, if you want to do librarian blurbs, or like if you're looking to connect with bookstagrammers and book bloggers, like these are all people that you like have in your corner and like have at least like some sort of familiarity with once you get to those points in your publishing process.
I think learn from other writers. That's something that I didn't take the time to do, mostly because I was keeping on writing, but learn from other writers. I mean, all of that, what Johnny and Lakin have said, just, you know, and you, I mean, just, I've been taking notes. So learn from everybody else and get names and put them on the spreadsheet. And for the next book, start reaching out, or, you know, for the first book, start reaching out. But I wish that I had become, and join a group, like if you're Latinx, the Las Musas, but you know, there's always a debut group for that year. So join that debut group for that year, whether it's picture book debut group or the middle grade debut book, or there's other books about just the middle grade books on Facebook and on Twitter, and join those groups and learn from other writers, and don't be afraid to ask, and don't, people, the most amazing thing I think about writers, even though you could say that we're competing against each other, is how generous everybody is with their resources. Mm-hmm. So just learn from other people. Mm-hmm. That, you know, take the time. Yeah.
Can I add to that? Like, I think like we should definitely shout out the Hermanas program for Las Musas. Like, not only being able to partner with a published Musa or Madrina, but also like being able to get their insight on what like marketing and publicity looks like, because like mentorship programs aren't all just let's critique your manuscript. It's like, what's next? What's your future going to look like? And I think for a lot of mentorship programs, it's like, how am I going to help you, not just from this set of months, but like afterwards? And so to be able to take part in a program like that, or really any mentorship program, and have the availability of a published author to tell you like what that sort of marketing and publicity looks like in their like history of publishing books can be really insightful for you.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I know that's true. There's a lot of information in groups like that. And for me, what worked too is I read a lot of books. There's a couple of good books out there that talk about the timeline. I think it's What to Do Before Your Publishing, your first published book, or I can't remember the exact title, but it gives you a overview of a timeline starting a year prior, and it breaks it down by month. And I like that. I enjoyed that. And I Googled articles on what was the best advice out there. And for me too, the networking, you know, if you join SCBWI, Las Musas, you know, you create this network. And Terry's right. There's just so many wonderful people out there that are willing to help you out. And in the same way with you, you know, you're able to help them as well. So it's all a circle. We're all connected. So I would say that's probably my one of my best advice from published authors, just to get connected. And also just start early, even before you sign anything, you know, just start reading and networking and learning the ways, because once you sign that contract, it's moving fast. It's really, really, I mean, I can't believe how quick these months have been flying by with edits and trying to learn all the marketing team, what they do. And yeah, it's a lot of stuff. So now we move to the last question. What do you wish you had known about the marketing and publicity side of book publishing? What were you surprised to learn?
I wish I had known, like I mentioned before, how much priorities can change between the day you sign your contract and the day that your book comes out. Mm-hmm. Also, you know, publishers have tried really hard to dismiss the notion that they're still tokenizing authors and that they're still wary of acquiring or even of spotlighting more than one book by POC authors from a similar race or cultural background. Mm-hmm. But personally, I have felt that this is still the case, and not just within each publishing house, but also when it comes to publishing adjacent organizations like cons and festivals. Also, that publishers still prefer to push the pain narrative when it comes to stories by and about by POC characters. But the truth is, a lot of readers, especially like white teachers and white librarians, they still really want those stories too. Mm-hmm. And so leading with the romance in my book in terms of the cover and the copy and all of the promotional materials, mm-hmm. I think it has made it a little bit harder for the book to break out, especially when it comes to like getting into school libraries and classrooms. Mm-hmm. So I'm really mostly relying on word of mouth to promote the book. And, you know, thank God for Own Voices reviewers and like mm-hmm. the Latinx book reviewing community, because they're mm-hmm. doing like the absolute most. But coming from self-publishing, I just thought that it would be different. Like, I thought the workload would be a little bit different. I thought mm-hmm. the amount of like pleading with people online to read my book would be different, but it's really the same. And in fact, I feel like I'm doing more promo work now because being an author is my full-time job. Mm. So it just kind of feels like the more things change, the more they stay the same. I think that kind of sums up what I've learned about this aspect of the publishing journey.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's incredible just how much work goes into it. And I've never self-published, but I've heard a lot of work goes into self-publishing, and to get that perspective from you, you know, that no, you're putting probably more work now. That's incredible. My goodness. Thank you for sharing that. And next, Johnny, what's your opinion?
Yeah, I think maybe this like relates to Lakin's answer, but like I just think I had no idea how much of the work I would be doing like on my own and just like getting my book out there myself. But also in that same point, like constructing a narrative that I think best fits my book, because like also related, like I have had like interviews set up from my publicist where like it was like, oh, they're gonna talk about like the romance in your book. And it turns out that like they were highlighting rom-coms, and it's like, my book isn't a rom-com. Like there's romance in it, but like when I see like, oh, we're talking about like romance YA and like rom-coms, and like there's my book right under it, I'm like, and like even during the interview, it's like, like we were talking about like my book, and I'm like, yeah, like there's difficult points in there, and they're like, okay, but what about the romance part? And I'm like, yes, like there's romance part, but I want to be able to tell you like what also is in there, because I don't want to mislead anyone who is reading this article and thinks this book can be for them and ends up being way too like not. Mm-hmm. Like I have an author's note in the beginning of the book for a reason. I like to highlight that, and like I think it's like important that like, yes, that there's a bunch of romance and love in it, but there's also like a bunch of not. And mm-hmm. like, it's a coming of age story essentially with like a romance plot in there. And so like, I want to be able to construct that narrative of like, my book is a contemporary coming of age novel with romance involved, but it is not a rom-com by any means. And like being able to construct that like is essential, I think. And like being able to like to use your voice to be able to make sure that people, the right people, get your book, and like the people who maybe aren't ready to read it, like don't necessarily come into it with the wrong idea, is important and something that like we can't like fully do ourselves, but like we can have like a little bit of control over, at least like in what we can get out there. I also like, I don't honestly like wish I had known, but I wish that people in general, like I think recently, like especially recently on social media, there's been just a lot of authors that put down other authors because of a sense of like they're writing things that like they don't believe. A lot of like just putting down authors. And like I think the best thing you can do for publicity for yourself is to uplift other authors, is to shout out other authors and other books whenever you get the chance to do that, whether it's on Twitter or doing an interview or just like you get the opportunity to like shout out a book, like do it, especially like other BIPOC books. Like we already aren't getting the amount of voice like from our publishers. So I think it's important to uplift other people just as much as you uplift your own book, because that just turns into a whole community of like them uplifting your book too, whenever they get the chance. And just this whole network of people like just all talking praises about our books that like I might not be able to reach, but like this other author gets to reach, and like vice versa. And so like I think the biggest thing that you can do that's going to be helpful not only to you but just to everyone like who writes the books that you want to see on shelves is just to uplift people, like is just to talk good things about the books that you're excited for along with your own book, or even more than your own book, because then it's going to get them talking about your book, and like it's going to get a tenfold back to you.
That's true. It's just such a hard industry to get published, and then not only to get published, you know, get through those gates, and then trying to promote your book, it's just, it's hard. So we have to rely on each other to do this. So, and how about for you, Terry, what's your biggest surprise?
I'd like to echo what Lakin was saying about the pain narrative. I think that's something that we all need to talk about, because the pain narrative is kind of puts your book in a different place and puts us in a different place, as in we really don't exist as real human beings. We're just part of that narrative, and it's something that we need to work on. And I love what Johnny was saying about uplifting other books. The thing that I wish I had known was that I had the right to sit down with the marketing and ask publicity questions and ask marketing questions way back when. I should have done it way back when. And I'm going to start doing that now for the books that are coming out a year from now, because I think it's important that we all, that you know what you're expected to do so you can plan. So you can plan. It doesn't mean that it's going to be good. It doesn't mean that the house needs to give you this much or that much, but you need to know. You need to know what they're doing, when they're doing it. But in order to do that, you need to be really prepared and know who you want to reach, what bloggers you want to reach, what awards you want to be put out there for, who do you want to reach? So that they know that this is who you want, and then make sure that whatever they're not doing, you're doing. So it's a two-way street, but I wish that I had known way ahead of time that I could have asked for that.
Yeah, there's a lot of information out there, and that's something I had trouble too, discerning, you know, what bloggers to reach or what reviewers to reach or not reach either. Cause I, you know, you don't want to waste all your energies and time, and it's so limited. You'll burn out, you know, trying to reach you, everybody. I mean, you should have seen my list, you know, and then half of them, I think, didn't even want to hear from authors. They wanted to hear straight from the publisher. So I was surprised about that. I'm like, okay, that, you know, I got to send it to the publisher now. And the publisher kind of discerns too, like, okay, do we reach out to them or not? So there's a lot of stuff that it's out of your control, and you kind of got to step back and accept, you know, that. So
one thing that I was thinking about is that it's good to approach that in the beginning, in the honeymoon period. That's when your editor is, you know, when everything is so new to both of you, when you're, and you know, everybody is trying to please each other. And not that you're not trying to please each other later, because gosh, I can't say enough about my editor. I mean, I love her, and I think we have come up with some beautiful books together. But I think if you start out in the very beginning, when neither of you is rushed trying to get to, you know, publication of this one, publication of that one, I need the edits on that, I need the pictures on that. When you're more relaxed in the very beginning of the relationship to talk about that.
Now, another surprising thing for me too was that I always heard about the big five, you know, how big their marketing team were. And then when I signed my contract with the smaller press, I was nervous about, you know, okay, what marketing efforts are out there. And what surprised me the most is just how strong Sourcebooks, you know, their team is incredible and have been very excited, and they're enthusiastic about my book. And it's just nice to have that support. Before, I used to think, no, that kind of support only comes from big five houses. But no, you know, people like your book. And that's another thing too, that I think that helps. When they see you putting the effort, they get motivated too. You know, you're not sitting back, just relaxing, expecting, you know, kind of like Stephen King, that, you know, I'll do writing while you do your marketing. You know, they see you doing the hard work, and they will put the hard work too. So that's something that pays off.
I think that's like a really good point. Like, I was also so scared of, I ended up with like a mid-sized publisher, and I was just like, not getting those resources that like a big five publisher can get. But like, at the end of the day, passion is completely separate from what their job title is or where they work. And like, I have seen friends who get very little from their big five publishers, because that's just like the way that they rank these books, like, it's just very much tied to how much they're gonna get. And like, really, passion can't play a role in that, because it's like, there's big money in that, and there's focus on certain titles, where like, as in a mid-sized or smaller publisher, like, there's more of an emphasis on like, we have room to talk about your book, and we can see you and like what you're putting behind it. And yeah, like, I don't think there should be a fear in going with a mid or smaller publisher, especially in your first book. I remember my agent telling me, Adam Silvera started out with a really small publisher, and now he's where he's at now. Like, wow. You know, we all have to start somewhere. And like, as long as you have enthusiasm over your work and you're passionate about it, like, that's already a huge step forward.
Yeah, it's the passion, you know, the passion you bring into the work and the effort. So, all right. So thank you so much, everybody, for joining us. If you'd like to learn more about Las Musas or our books, please visit our website at lasmusasbooks.com, or find us on social media at Las Musas Books. And be sure to check out our bookshop page, where each purchase of one of our books goes towards supporting independent bookstores. If you enjoyed this episode, please like, review, and subscribe wherever you listen to your podcasts. You can also sign up for the new Las Musas newsletter to have podcast updates, as well as other Musa news, such as release dates, teasers, spotlights, and more, delivered straight to your inbox. Thank you so much for listening.